The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Well, I just had a recent epiphany about my age. Took out my driver's license. And it hit me. I thought, you know, that's not a bad picture. You know you're getting old. These days, my pictures don't do me much justice. They're looking more and more like me. I look in the mirror, I go, who's that dude? What happened to that 28-year-old? Where did he go? I have a friend who says, if we didn't have mirrors, we wouldn't know that we're getting older. Not a bad thought. Nice to have you here on The Doctor Is In. Appreciate it so very much. The number to get onto the program, kind of lopsided, I think, a little bit. You can just call a number and get on. I had to beg and grovel, scratch my way onto having my own program. 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal. Now, I'm surprised at how many people email me and say, I don't get it. What is 57 equal? It's when you spell out the name equal by the letters that go with each number on your phone. But Dr. Ray, that's an 8-digit number after the prefix. Yeah, I know, but the L drops off. I could say equalization, and you could type that all out, and it doesn't matter. It's just going to go EQUA. 877-57 equal. And the reason I do that is because it's easier to remember. I remember when I was in grad school, we had to take a course on physiological psychology. And memory was one of our topics. And they said the average person remembers with little effort or modicum of effort, 7 particular digits or items. And that was very easy. So those of you who are older, do you remember when you had prefixes on your phone? Ours was Glendale 4006, something like that. GL, Glendale 64006. That's right, is what it was. Gyro 64211. It was easy when there weren't as many phones. And then we had to start using area codes. And then area codes broke up. I used to be 216 out of Cleveland, and now I'm 330 out of Canton. So now it's 10 digits you have to remember, and that's a lot harder for a lot of people. But love to have you on the program. Here's how the program works. If you have a question about something in your life, a concern, a struggle, or doesn't have to be, it could just simply be, hey, what do you think of this, Roy Ganuti? Or if you have a comment to help somebody else who's called previously, we get a lot of those, and that's very nice to get. You people are very charitable that way. A generic question. Dr. Ray, I've heard IQ genius level. What does that mean? He has an IQ of a genius level. How do they decide what a genius is? And I don't even know what an IQ is. I don't even know what Q stands for. Those kinds of questions. Very helpful. Very much delighted to take them on. Good Lord permitting. I guess Columbus, Ohio. Those of you down in the St. Gabriel listening area, which we did the TV show down there not so long ago. Great visit with those folks. Columbus, Ohio, the Kasich Center, men's conference, big monster men conference. Where is the website on this? Hold on a second. I'll give you the website. Where is he? I thought I had it here. I've got several communications on this. Catholic Men's Ministry, Catholic, I think if you're promotional video, coming days. I'm stalling too much dead air radio time. Where is this here? Push that one. If I don't get it, I'll get it on the break. Here it is. CatholicMen'sMinistry.com. You go there. 2025 conference. It gives you all the details, where it is, when it is. It's this Saturday. They said they're talking 1,000 to 2,000 guys. You know, I've spoken to a lot of women's conferences. And typically what happens is they have this bevy of guys before the conference come up front. And there's usually 20 or 30 of them. And they say, these are our helpers. These gentlemen will make sure that all of the needs that our ladies have will be taken care of in terms of cars, parking, food, etc. Coffee. And then I noticed when I go to these big men's conferences, one woman pretty much can handle all of it. One woman. Ratio is usually about 20 to 1 men helpers for women's conferences and women's helpers for men's conferences. Okay. I'm going to start a little, I guess a little symposium here on some of the more widespread misconceptions about ADHD. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's the one most people are familiar with. There's another form of that, which is a sustaining of attention problem, but the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is mostly marked by excessive activity, distractibility, and impulsiveness. The diagnosis since 1990 has gone up 900%. Now, that's basically what, 10 times? 10 times. Now, of course, we can say, well, we're more aware now. We have more mental health people looking into it. We have more people seeking it out. Okay, could be one explanation. I think there's others. And I think those others are surrounding the misconceptions. Let me just give you a couple. I can't get into all of them. I'm looking at the clock here, and I got to go to the phones. I hate that. Did you notice that? Crutch word, word filler. You ever notice how many people say, If you look at ADHD as a neurologically based disorder, the tail end of the temperamental continuum, we are all distractible to some degree. We are all impulsive to some degree. We are all active to some degree. If you go to the top 3 to 5%, let's just use the diagnosis with kids. If you go to that, you got 3 to 5% who are very, very distractible, very, very impulsive, very, very active, much more so than 95% of their age group. Here's what I see happening. If you confine it to that 3 to 5%, you're more likely to get a reliable diagnosis. It's creeping backward. I'm seeing more and more that are 10, 15%. They're in the 85th percentile or the 80th percentile, which makes them look, of course, more active than average. Maybe more impulsive than average, more distractible than average, but they're not extremely so. But they're still getting the diagnosis. I'm seeing that. I'm seeing a lot of that. So I think that's one complication, one factor in the heavy diagnoses of ADHD. Some many years ago, I was in a workshop on ADHD, given by a guy that's a guru in the area. I mean, he is probably one of the top guys for ADHD in the area. And I remember somehow, some way, they got wind that I said that the diagnosis of ADHD would be complicated, confusing because kids, and this was 20 years ago, I can only imagine it now, kids are immersing themselves in very fast-paced, hyper-stimulating technological stuff. The video games, the computers, the phones, everything is just moving at blinding speed. And I said, that would seem to me to make a lot of kids look distractible and hyperactive and not able to sustain attention because they're being shaped by this. Well, one of the fellas, not the guy that did the workshop, but I think one of his colleagues, called me. He just reamed me up one side and down the other. How dare you imply that a neurological disorder has that kind of factor involved in it? And I told him, I said, I didn't imply that's what caused the disorder. I said that's what can confuse the diagnosis of the disorder. Well, since then, all kinds of research has come out that has said the time spent, especially with boys, the time spent on this stuff does affect their attention span. Of course, it's being shaped. And actually, there is research coming out now that's saying there are neurological changes. This is not just behaviorally learned changes, neurological changes. The more a kid immerses himself in a go, go, get, fast, fast, now, hyper-stimulatory environment of these games especially, less likely he is to sit in school and go, what? You want me to what? Look at the board? For how long? What's this paper in front of me? There's a lot of problems on this paper. I don't want to do this many problems. And especially having boys sit. It's tough for boys to sit. Boys are naturally more active than girls. They're not as naturally studious as girls, at least in certain kinds of learning. So because of that, more and more this is happening. I had one teacher tell me one time, but she was in a private school, a Christian school. She had 16 kids. Hers was not a special ed class. She had 16 kids. Eight of them were on medication. Eight. 50%. So those are two of the factors. There's a lot more factors, but I'm looking at the clock and I'm way past break. Definitely. Third definitely. Want to talk to you.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heart-sick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sick. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Our world is filled with noise, work, screens, and endless demands. But Christ calls us to step away and listen. The nonprofit Revive app offers one-on-one virtual conversations with certified spiritual companions who help you deepen your relationship with God, discern His will, and find peace. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V. And then the number 3.
You are listening to the least worst of the Doctor is in with Dr. A. Grandy. So please, no calls at this time.
I was at a wedding the other day, and I finally learned not to go out on the dance floor when the average age out there is 21. So about 10 years ago, I was the old guy on the dance floor. People saying, what is he? He's going to hurt himself. His walker's banging into these young people. So I just kind of sat there and ate my money's worth to break even on my wedding gift. I got a new book coming out. And I'm going to talk about it in a little bit if I get a chance. But you're first. Claire, before I put you on the air, I want to do a little bit of a prefatory introduction here. Well, no, I'll tell you what. Let me take Claire, and then I'll do a post comment. Hi, Claire.
Before I say anything, I just want to let you know that you and my 1.5-year-old have the same taste in music. That's great when your music comes on and he starts dancing to it.
Poor
but
kid.
But it's the same one in a healthy... yeah, poor Joseph. But it's my 1.5-year-old, who I'm having problems with, he's decided that when he's angry and upset, he's going to bang his head against the floor. And he's got bruises now. Like, it's not a gentle little, I'm upset, look, I'm going to
hurt
myself, mommy. It's like,
would you be offended if I said you got a dumb kid?
No, I'd say he probably takes after me.
Because if he were smart, he'd bang somebody else's head on the floor. But it's not really very smart to bang your own head on the floor. And I did that when I was a kid, and look what's happened to me. So you say he's got bruises. So in other words, he's banging it pretty good.
Yes.
Do you have a pack and play or something like that?
We do have a pack and play, yeah.
All right. Put it up. Put it up in the front room. The instant he bangs, you pick him up, you put him in a pack and play. Right now.
Okay, for how long?
As long as you want.
Okay.
And you just simply no, because he's not in timeout. He's just in a pack and play. Some of you might say, well, that is a timeout, Dr. A. Yeah, but he's got a little more freedom in there than he would in a corner or sitting on a steps. But here's the thing. First of all, this is not a sign of anything. You know that, right, Claire? Don't you know that?
He's
been 1.5. So he's banging his head. And sometimes they do stupid things that we have to stop him from doing, which nobody stops us adults from doing stupid things, but at least we can stop 1.5-year-olds. So you pick him up, you put him in there, and you just say, no banging. It's very simple, no banging. And he'll learn very quickly, oh, man, I'm not going to bang my head on the floor because she'll put me in that place and all of a sudden I'll be really mad and I'll scream for a half an hour, which he probably will, right?
Yeah.
And he can't really bang. I mean, he'll try to bang himself on the soft railings or he'll try to bang himself on the padded floor of the pack and play, but that's not the same fun, you know, not hard enough.
Yeah, he can't see mommy getting upset. So it takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, here's the other thing, too, Claire. And this happened with us when we had our oldest son. He used to bounce down the stairs on his bottom. He liked it. He liked doing it. Well, he made bruises on his bottom. And I told my wife, do not send him. He was in preschool a couple of days a week. I said, don't send him to preschool. Because they're going to see that. And it's going to kick in an investigation. And we're going to have to be investigated up one side and down the other. They're going to talk to us about our discipline strategies and everything else. And I don't want some 26-year-old girl with an English degree, I know I'm being facetious here, but coming in and saying, okay, well, we're going to just assess whether you're being psychologically appropriate. So we didn't. So you have to be careful about that, too. You know, if somebody sees
I've dropped him off at my parents' house to go shopping because I didn't want to take him outside looking like that.
Yeah. I had a woman once who called me. My second book was called Back to the Family. And in the Back to the Family book, we interviewed strong families and we asked them, do you spank? About 70% of them did. They said, yeah, typically when the kids were younger and very sparingly. Well, she was taken to court and she was moving up the appellate course because the neighbor lady saw her, I think her 2 or 3 year old shins all bruised up and turned her in. And that started the process. I think she even lost temporarily custody of him. So she called me. She said, get me that book. I'm taking it to court with me. So I don't really know what happened after that. But that you got to be careful on that. So let's just let those bruises heal and put him in that pack and play. And he'll, I say, 5 times should do it. Should do it. He will realize that.
6 times you want me to call you back and tell you that it's not working?
No, I want you to call me back and say, Dr. Ray, you're a genius. You're brilliant. And if you can't say
that, that's why I called you in the first place, because you're a genius and you're brilliant.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to blow it then. Yeah, if it takes 8 times, okay. He'll get it real quick. He'll get it real quick. Up to this point, nothing's been happening other than it hurts a little bit.
Well, I've been putting him in timeout, but he can still bang his head in timeout.
That's so. It. That's exactly it. You're making it impossible for him to bang his head. And when he gets smarter, Claire, he's going to stop banging his head, and he's going to start attacking your house, which doesn't hurt him. But, you know, he's not smart enough yet to not self-assault, you know? Thank you, dear. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye. Okay, here's the deal. I was 4 years old. I don't know if any of you remember those little games, Kitty in the Keg, where you unlocked these barrels and you went all the way down to this tiniest barrel with little kitty in it. Oh, man, I thought it was just a great little game. Well, it wasn't closing the way I wanted it to close. I threw it up against the cinder block wall in our basement, and it kind of smashed. Yeah, I had a good arm. My mom was washing clothes nearby. She said, Raymond, pick it all up. And I, being the sweet child that I am, said, you pick it up. Oh, she wasn't going to. So I went over, this just shows you how bright I was, to the cinder block wall and started banging my head against the cinder block wall. Yeah, it probably had residual effects all the way through my life, as you can tell. I said something like, I'm going to keep doing this until you pick it up. She came toward me, and I thought, putty in my hands. Yep, I knew it. I knew I could get her. She said, here, let me help you. Now, she wasn't going to do anything. I didn't know that. I stopped. I calculated that head banging is not all it's cracked up to be. My mom was Italian. She was not easily manipulated. Jimmy, Philadelphia, PA, how are you, sir?
I'm doing awesome, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate yours. Thanks.
I've listened into the show kind of on and off over the years, and I've got a...
That's your problem, Jimmy. That's your problem, Jimmy. Off and on, that's it.
Locked in every day.
Yeah, you've got psychological gaps. Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Well, that's why I'm calling, so you can offer me some correction. So,
alrighty, sir.
Here's what I'm looking into. It's my daughter is 7 years old. Recently, we received a diagnosis of ADHD from her doctor, which was kind of came from her teacher and my wife and myself kind of filling out an assessment sheet on her behavior, attention span, those things, because we're looking to get her a little bit more assistance at school to kind of help keep her focused. Now, I, when I was younger, also received a diagnosis of ADD at the time, and am, as an adult now, mildly familiar with how I was able to overcome and persevere through some of those challenges and just had to make some of my own adjustments, and I think it just took a long time to come to some of the realizations of what I needed to do to focus and those things. So here's my question, is that I am concerned that as my wife and I try to search for some resources to do the best job of guiding and parenting and helping to teach our daughter, that I need to find some, I hear the music there, that I need to find some resources that don't fall into the gentle parenting model and fall into more of the Dr. Ray's model of reality.
Oh, I like that. I like that. It makes a good book title. Jimmy, you stay there. We're gonna pick you up after the break, and we'll discuss this, and I'll get a chance to shamelessly self-promote. This is Dr. Ray.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mother Angelica said that the essence of evangelization is to tell everyone that Jesus loves you. Matt Frad says that it is one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. Are we so full of the things of the world that we can't hear or receive the gifts that God is giving to us? In Isaiah, we hear, "The Lord delights in you. I've called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my eyes, and I love you." Well, we often don't want to hear that, and in the Gospel of Matthew, it hits us over the head even more that we're invited to be part of the kingdom of God. Jesus is king, and he's come to establish his kingdom. The Beatitudes are the eight roads to God. They lead us with his gifts of the Holy Spirit to become the new person in Christ who will find happiness and bring that happiness to others. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Why would God permit the devil to tempt his son in the desert? The symbolism behind those temptations, as provided by the Catholic Catechism, gives great insight into God's rationale. Jesus, driven by the Spirit, goes into the desert to live in solitude for 40 days. At the close of that period of prayer and fasting, the devil arrives to attempt to compromise Jesus' filial devotion to God, his Father. Satan tempts Jesus three times, and Jesus rebuffs him three times. This is a recapitulation of Satan's seduction of Adam. Only this time, he loses to the new Adam. It is also a recapitulation of Israel in the desert, when the Hebrews provoked God during their 40-year sojourn. In contrast, Jesus is totally obedient to his Father's will. Jesus' victory over temptation is a prelude to his victory over sin on the cross. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Hey, you're listening to the Least Worst of the Doctor is In with Dr. Ray Guarani.
Hear about the priest looking for something. His friend walked in. The priest said, "I'm meeting some members of the laity, and I can't find my collar." Friend said, "Ah, a lay dating, a collar short." sorry, a little. 877-57. Yeah, it doesn't drop off, does it? All right. Let's go back to Jimmy. Jimmy, you still there?
I am.
Okay, sir. You touched upon something I'm going to, how should I put this? I'm going to talk about, I don't know if you heard, given that you're an off and on listener, this is your problem, Jimmy. You probably didn't catch my monologue, my opening monologue, when I talked about some of the misconceptions regarding ADHD. Did you? Admit it.
I did not. Just as I thought.
Well, we can just hang up right now if that's the kind of respect I'm going to get. All right, I'm going to let it slide this time. Don't let it happen next time.
Thank you. Yes,
so sir. I said there are certain things that I think are resulting in a heavy diagnosis of ADHD. I did not talk about what you just said. I will in a future program, which is the rating forms. Typically, one of the more common diagnoses of ADHD happens when the teacher says, "Well, I just think there's some things here that we need to look into regarding her attention span, regarding her impulse control, regarding her acting out, whatever it might be." So you go to a doctor, either a physician, typically it's a physician, it's a general practitioner, a family practitioner. That's what you did, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's a lot of times the way it is. And you get rating forms. They give you rating forms. The teacher fills one out, you fill one out. And lo and behold, whoa, look where your daughter scored. She is up there on these characteristics, right?
Right.
Yep. Now, there's two problems here, two cautions. Rating forms are very subjective. So if you have a certain perception of your daughter being a certain way, It's going to tone how you rate it. Secondly, how long did that, and I'm not impugning anyone, how long did that physician talk to you or your daughter?
She didn't talk to her. She talked to us. Uh-huh. And I don't know, maybe 30 minutes. I mean, she spent a little bit of time.
Okay, that's a lot. Most of them is 10 to 15.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Given that, it's to accurately diagnose this, you got to go through a lot. You got to get a social history. You got to find out what's going on in the home. Ideally, you observe the child in a classroom. You talk to the teacher. Now, almost nobody does that. That's the way you got to do this to get a very reliable diagnosis in a lot of cases. Since that didn't happen, and I'm not questioning the diagnosis. Don't mishear me. I'm just simply saying that. If we look at this and we see your daughter exhibiting these symptoms that people say, oh, yeah, is she a behavior problem for you?
She responds. She responds to feedback. She's more of a problem with focus and being able to accomplish the simple things that we'll ask her to do or to stay kind of on task for any more than a very short amount of time.
So
we're getting a lot of that from school, a lot of feedback from school where she's not accomplishing her work in class.
Okay, so her symptom picture is more of a spacey, ditzy, drift off inattentiveness, right?
Yeah, that's probably right.
Okay. That responds a lot less to medication. That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing is, I don't know your daughter. It could be that right now the work's a little hard for her, for whatever the reason, developmentally, maybe some learning quirks. It's hard for her. And the most natural response is to drift away. This is not easy for me. It doesn't come easy. It's no fun. And I'm going to do anything just to avoid it. I see that a lot. Okay? So that's a possibility. What you're going to be forced to do is have all the work come home, and she'll work at the table after school, and you monitor it and give her breaks, however you wish to do that, because otherwise what tends to happen is they fall further and further behind, and then 2 years from now they're going to say, I think you need to hold her back, which usually doesn't work too well. So at this point, monitoring of the schoolwork is big. Finding out what exactly the teacher's doing in terms of breaking up the assignments, in terms of sitting her in a place where she's not as distracted. Who knows? I know there's all kinds of little things you can do. But for me, my first question would be, is she somewhat immature? And if she is, then that would explain some of this. Is she?
No, you know, I don't think that she's immature for her age. I think that especially the class that she's in, there are multiple children, you know, maybe a quarter of the class to a third have some type of different behavioral type issues. And so I'm finding that the teacher is very overwhelmed with a lot of that. And so you've got a good percentage of this class that you can give a task to, an assignment, and they'll go through it. And then it's very easy for my daughter to fall into the distraction. So just most recently, the other day, same thing. She brought some of this work home, and I'm like, "Honey, we went. Like, I know you did this. This is work that you did in class." And she's like, "Yeah, the teacher did it." And then I didn't. And I'm like, "Why?" Well, I was distracted. So she's even saying that. She's like, "Well, I was getting distracted." So she's paying attention to the kid making.
Well, the question becomes, Jimmy, is she being distracted or is she distractible? See, that's the question. Because if, in fact, these kids are acting up and this class is chaos, then it's going to be a tough learning environment for her.
No, and I think that's a big part of it. But she is very distractible. So when I sit her down at the kitchen table and we're going over things, I have to do a lot of like attention grabbers to like snap her back to paying attention. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to do now is to create breaks to work on little tasks at a time, maybe just the front page of one sheet, and then go take a couple minute break and then come back and focus again. I mean, I used to have to lock, when my parents started this, basically putting me in the bathroom with nothing in the bathroom when I was her age or a little older to do my homework because I could not pay attention. I couldn't focus. And then further on in life, I just somehow, it started to click in my mind that I have to do this. So even to today, I mean, I got to put like earphones in when I'm trying to study or focus on something. I can't have any distractions. It takes me a long time to get back in the zone, if you will, if I get interrupted in a task that I'm working on. But I've just been able to brute force overcome it with discipline and willpower that a 7-year-old doesn't have. So I just want the tools to be able to help her and guide her to develop some of those for herself, regardless if the diagnosis is 100% accurate or not.
There are a lot of books out there probably dealing with this, a very, very common, popular topic. I don't have any. The closest I have to that is Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. I don't have any. So you can search out for some of those books and see what you can do. And by the way, you touched on something, which is ADD is definitely got a high genetic component to it. So that's part of the explanation.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. By asking for spiritual communion, we are acknowledging that the Holy Mass is the perfect, best way to worship God. The priest intercedes perfectly for us with God the Father because he acts in persona Christi. This is the time to see that through the priest's representation of Christ's sacrifice on Calvary, we are never separated from our Lord. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. Very nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production, EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, and Ave Maria Radio. Communications with my compadres there in Ann Arbor. Andrew Kruchek, producer man. Eric Dumont, call screamer man. I can't believe this. I'm nervous here about taking Catherine from Lincoln, Nebraska, because, well, she's basically saying, Dr. Ray, your book didn't do me any good. That's what I'm reading between the lines here. Makes me nervous. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
I'd rather put the blame on you, but okay, if you want to blame the book, go ahead.
Well, you know what? I have 5 kids, and it's working on the 3 out of the oldest 4, and I'll give some grace to the 1-year-old since.
Oh, okay. All right. So we got one that's really, really pushing on it.
Yeah, and I can't blame him. He's 11 years old, so I vacillated between lax and then, you know, yelling, ineffective.
Wait a minute, so. Catherine. So I knew it. I was hoping you'd say that because you were saying you're having a hard time implementing the book. But if you're lax and then yelling, that's not implementing the book.
Well, no, this was before. Then I got the books, and I've been going all in, like, was suggested. We have just you know, and the, our youngest are taking very well to it. Our oldest, he just in the last week, we've been having him write essays. So two so far, and then writing lines and instant consequences.
Only a week here, Catherine?
Only a week. I just recently got your book, so only a week.
Okay, stop there a second. Your son is 11 years and how many months?
He'll 8 months.
Okay. So let's go from two. So that's 9 years from age two. That's 9 times 12 is 108. And 8 months is 116 months. And that's approximately, we're going to just make it real easy, double. So that's 232 weeks of you saying you've been alternating between lax and yelling, right? 232 weeks?
Right.
And now 1 week.
Well, my question is more the way he reacts. It's the concern over, so the first time we had him write an essay, he was saying things like, I'm not going to be able to finish this because I'll be dead. And then when I said, oh, you know, how do you suppose that will happen? And he was like, well, I won't eat or drink anything. It's taken 2 hours and we don't respond, but he hasn't. It's like possession, you know? He shrieks and he screams, but then by the third hour when he actually starts it, he gets it written within an hour, you know? And then he has like a bounce in his step. My question is, did you give any resources to your own children when you had them write essays? Like, you know, I pretty much just gave him the dictionary and the catechism the first time.
You can do what you want, Catherine. You can make him write sentences. You can make him write an essay. You can make him define dictionary words. You can make him copy scripture. You can make him copy inspirational book. You can do whatever you want. Your mom. What that is kind of a written timeout. But here's what you're experiencing, I think. I don't know your son, so I can't really comment specifically on your situation. But here's what I typically see with, let's say, an 11-year-old kid whose mom says, I'm changing the way we're operating, which is really what you've done. And the reason I said you had 232 weeks of that particular style, and you've had 1 week of changing your style... Hmm. You know, your son is basically saying, I think, what are you doing? You can't do this. This is ridiculous. This is stupid. I mean, I'm going to show you how mad I am, and I'm going to say all kinds of ugly things. I see that routinely when parents come into my office after trying to gain control of a situation where the child has for years... not really been easily cooperative because of his temperament, and he's defeated the parents. As a result, when you're finally saying, here's what you got to do, he goes crazy on you, flat out. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're witnessing. I can't say for sure. I don't know your son, but I see it all the time. I call it escalation in a couple of my books. What you can do, here's, you can try this. You can say, well, son, I'll tell you what. You got 1 hour to write the essay. If it's not written in an hour, I'm just going to take it. I'll take what you have, and you don't have to write it. Oh, but wait. But by the way, you have no privileges whatsoever of any kind until the essay's written. 3 hours from now, I'll give you another chance. You can do that.
And so with those privileges, is it like...
Everything.
Do you suggest taking away everything in his
everything.
Room at that point?
Well, toys. Yeah. Toys, yeah. Games, stuffed animals, favorite shirt, hoodie. I mean, you just simply say, look, son, I'm not going to fight you. You don't want to fight him. I'm not going to fight you.
Okay.
You know, when he goes crazy like that, he's not a two-year-old. He's an 11-year-old who's basically letting his emotions go nutso on you. Why? Because he absolutely hates what you're doing. You've never done this before. What kind of nonsense have you been reading? That's the way he looks at it. It doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, pretty much every parent that walks in my office, I always have to talk to him and say, look, when you do this, you be ready, because depending upon how your son chooses to react to this, it could get pretty fiery.
Right.
No, when he says, you know, I'm gonna stop eating. Well, only you know how serious that is. I mean, if he's just blowing smoke because he wants to make you feel rotten, and because he's done it before in the past, when you frustrated him, he fires off all kinds of stuff designed to make you second guess yourself.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, after he said that, I had gone downstairs and came up back up, and he was drinking out of a water bottle. So, I mean.
Yeah, that's kind of a sign. But
you have the perseverance.
Again, what you're seeing is 11 years or 9 years from since he was time to use two, 9 years of him really getting used to the fact that you either let it slide, or you yelled, or you argued, or negotiated, or you debated, or you wrangled, or you reminded, or you got frustrated, or you didn't know what to do, or you tried everything, nothing works. And all of that happened over 9 years. And now when you say, especially when he's pre-adolescent, probably his hormones are starting to kick in, now when you say, you know, I think I better change some things because it's gotten really ugly around here and I'm not doing you any favors, son. He's like, what? You're kidding. I can't tell you how many parents will tell me when they sign an essay, the kid will look at them like, I'm not writing that. I'm not doing it. Not a chance. I say, okay, then just shut him down. You don't have to do it. All privileges are gone till you do.
Okay.
Okie dokie. And I talk about, Catherine, I don't know if you're that part of the book or not, but I talk about in the book, what do you do when they refuse the consequence?
I did read the blackout. I guess I've been letting him, I haven't gone back and forth with him. We haven't gone back and forth. He rants and raves pretty much to himself for the 2 hours, but then he does do it.
Okay.
Because we say, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're not doing anything. You're not participating in anything until it's done. That's
and I would
choice.
Suspect that, Catherine, he's ranting for 2 hours now, but a month from now, he'll rant for 5 minutes.
Okay.
It'll slowly taper.
I guess that's just the hope I need there.
Well, he needs to be convinced that you mean what you say. Right now, he's still looking at you like, what's going on with you? What are you doing? This is against all the way we've operated. What? Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Call me back.
Thank you.
Go. Bless your heart. This is Dr. A. I'll be back.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In the fourth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, he describes several characteristics of spiritual desolation. Three of these include when a soul experiences a lack of confidence, is without hope, and is without love. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "The lack experienced in spiritual desolation does not signify the loss of faith, hope, and love as abiding virtues in the heart of the baptized. What decreases is the conscious, felt experience of these three virtues. A lack of confidence may cause a soul to have doubts about their life of faith. A soul without hope may feel discouraged in their progress towards God. And a soul without love may experience a heart that feels cold and unable to sense God's love. The call in spiritual desolation is always to reject the desolating lies and to trust in a God who loves us."
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
You're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
That is the toughest part for parents. When they ultimately realize things are just not going well. And much of it surrounds discipline. These are good parents. These are loving people. And they don't understand, you know, this dear mom, she had five kids. So obviously she wants kids. She loves kids. And she's thinking, okay, three of them are responding very well to this. But this got this one, who's probably the oldest, sounded like he was the oldest, is just resisting. And that's what fills my office when parents come in and say, we've tried to do A, B, C, D, and E, and we ran into the most fiery resistance. And it's totally understandable. You've changed the rules. Excuse me. And now the child's upset, really, really upset. But typically, once they realize this is the new modus operandi, little Latin lingo there, they do settle. They settle into it. And what tends to happen is the relationship improves dramatically. This is not a jackbooted, I'm the boss punk, and you better listen. No, no, no. No, no. This is, I don't want to fight with you. I don't want to argue and scream at you like I do anymore. I don't treat anybody like I treat you. I don't want to do that. I'm going to enforce the simple expectations for your moral well-being. And we'll have a peaceful home, and you'll be happier, and I'll be happier. And almost every parent comes into me 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks later and says, wow, I'm like, I'm living with a different kid. All right, I just got a call, text, actually, from Taylor Wilson, who is my publicist at Sophia and EWTN. And they're setting up all kinds of radio interviews, TV interviews for my newest book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. So, Taylor, if you're listening, thank you. You are truly deficient. Efficient. Sorry about that. Efficient. I was on, just did a film with EWTN News Nightly, Tracy Sable. One delightful lady. We were talking about the book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. And when you get to be my age, you sort of just get to the point where, get off my lawn, okay? That's my main concern about whatever has to be. Get off my lawn. And so I told Tracy, I said, Tracy, probably shouldn't tell you this. And I tried to convince him not to do it. And we're going to get it changed. But on the back of the book, when it says, almost everybody, they had your picture. She just broke up, and she's a very professional interviewer, and she just decided, but what the heck. So, got to tell you about the Columbus Men's Conference down at the Kasich Center. Go to their website, columbusmensministries.com, for all the details on the time, the price. Harold Burke Sivers is going to be there. He's a firebrand, that guy is. And then I'll speak in the afternoon to the guys. One of the largest conferences in the country. As from what I understand, they've got 1,000 to 2,000. That's a lot of dudes. And one lady will be able to take care of all of their expectations regarding food and all of that. Just one person. That's all it takes, one lady. It takes 20 guys to do that at a women's conference. So, but that's kind of neat. All right. Nothing else here? All right. What do I want to say? Share you this. This was the first little preface in my book, Jesus the Master Psychologist. The Christian and the Materialist. Now, the Materialist means the universe is all there is, as Carl Sagan would say. Oh, the universe, billions and billions of years, and that's all there is, and that's all there ever will be. The Christian and the Materialist hold different beliefs about the universe. They can't both be right. The one who is wrong will act in a way which simply doesn't fit the real universe. Consequently, with the best will in the world, he will be helping his fellow creatures to their destruction. Yeah. If there is a God, and he says, do it this way, don't do it that way. He knows what he's talking about. He designed things. And so someone who says, no, 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 there either is no God or I'm going to ignore him, and we'll do it this way, is acting against the way God set it up. He's wrong. Bad stuff happens. Thank you for joining me here, Dr. Ray Garendi, program Doctor is In. So much appreciate the company. Walk with God, the designer, the universe.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.